911, what are you reporting?
I got a strange going on out here. Something just killed my dog.
Something killed your dog?
My dog went flying through the air over the tree. I don't know how it did it.
Okay.
Damn it, I'm really confused. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence, and he was dead when she hit the ground. I didn't see any cars. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence.
What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was?
There was. It was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sheriff?
Dia!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6 foot nine, I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Hey, everybody, this is Les Stroud. Yes, yes, I know, a.k.a. Survivor Man. And you're listening to Brian, Sasquatch Odyssey.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Sasquatch Odyssey. Thank you guys so much for clicking play. It is Wednesday. I hope you guys are having a great week. We've got an amazing show lined up for you, but as always, I want to start the show by inviting you. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. You can get me at brian@sasquatchodyssey.net. You can head over to our Patreon page, check it out, become a member there, and help support the show. I said I was going to do this show on Thursday, but I figured why not do it a day early, and instead of doing Throwback Thursday, let's do a Wisdom Wednesday and have a little bit more history into Bigfoot. I promised you guys the John Green show, so here it is. We're going to get into that in just a minute. I do a little bit of history narration in the beginning, and then the majority of the rest of this is just that interview that I pulled, and it's John Green talking about Sasquatch in his own words. I give full credit in the intro of the show to where we pull the audio from, so I think you will really enjoy it. Obviously, John Green passed away in 2016, so I can't go out and interview him now, but this is like the next best thing, is being able to hear what he feels about Sasquatch and some of his theories on the subject in his own words, so I think you guys will really enjoy that. If you guys enjoy the show and you wouldn't mind giving us a 5-star rating and leave us a review, I'd really appreciate that. As far as the outro music, a lot of you guys have been interested in me changing up the outro music. Some people like the old outro that we had. Some people like the new couple of songs that I've been using for the outro. And I teased this a couple of weeks back. And I used to sing country music. I was in a band for years. Almost had a record deal when I was 16. I actually recorded an album about 7 years ago in Nashville. So I actually got an email from Glenn. So hey to Glenn in Kentucky, who is also was a musician professionally for many, many years. And he emailed me last night and said, hey, I heard you were a country singer. Well, I mentioned that I was on the Pine Island Research Show the other night with Jeff. And he asked me how I got into law enforcement. And I sort of talked about some of the things I wanted to be when I grew up when I was a kid. And one of those things was a country music star. So anyway, I figured it would be fun. I've recorded tons and tons of music over the years. So I did a cover of Chris Stapleton's Whiskey and You, and I'm going to use that as the outro on the show. So if you're interested in hearing a little bit of music by me, and I may do that from time to time on some of these extra shows that I'm putting out throughout the week. But anyway, enough of that. I know you guys are here for the John Green show. So without further ado, I'm going to stop talking, let the music play. You guys sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. John Willison Green was born in Harrison Hot Springs, British Columbia on February 12, 1927 to his parents Howard and Marion Green. His father Howard served on the Canadian Parliament as well as cabinet minister, and his mother was a daughter of a prominent land baron from Vancouver. She would go on to be the first woman to graduate from the University of British Columbia School of Agricultural Sciences. John grew up and went on to college, earning his BA from the University of British Columbia, where he majored in English. He went on to obtain his master's degree in journalism from Columbia University. He spent time as a writer for various newspapers, including a part-time gig at the Globe and Mail. He eventually made his way to the paper's Toronto headquarters, where he landed a full-time position. He had several other jobs covering local news in Vancouver, and he eventually purchased his own paper, the Agassiz Harrison Advance, in 1954. Perhaps in a twist of fate, he met an interesting character in 1956 named René Dehendon, who began making inquiries about reports of hairy bipedal ape-like creatures in and around the Vancouver area. Initially, Green thought these reports were nothing more than fantasy, but his curiosity had been piqued. His interest grew as more reports trickled in around 1957, and he began to look deeper into these sightings. One of the first interviews that Green conducted was with Albert Osman. Osman claimed to be abducted by a large hairy bipedal ape-like creature while camping near the Toba Inlet in 1924. After being held captive for several days, Osman claimed that he seized the opportunity and made his escape. Green also took a look at the more recent Ruby Creek incident that was alleged to have taken place in 1941. Many of the residents in and around the area claimed to have seen the footprints that were allegedly left behind by this unknown creature. In 1958, while working an area near Bluff Creek, California, a group of loggers discovered a large number of footprints that measured around 16 inches long. Bulldozer operator Jerry Crew was featured on the front page of the newspaper holding a cast of one of these giant prints, and the creature was referred to as Bigfoot. John and his wife made the trip to check out the area where the crew alleged that they had found these footprints, but when they arrived, they were told that the footprints were destroyed as the workers continued on about their work. Discouraged but determined, John wanted to take a look around anyway. He and his wife June parked their car to have a look around. Almost immediately, they found tracks. And when examined, these tracks had very similar characteristics to the tracks that had been found at Ruby Creek. With his work in the field, Green began developing quite a reputation amongst others who were interested in the subject of Bigfoot, and he was eventually hired by Tom Slick, a millionaire from Texas, to help track Bigfoot in British Columbia. In October of 1967, Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin would make history when they filmed what they claimed to be a real live in the flesh Sasquatch, walking across a creek bed in Bluff Creek. Green was quick to recognize the potential importance of what the two had captured on film, and he arranged for scientists at the University of British Columbia to screen the film and offer their opinions on the footage. Green would go on to write and publish several books on the subject, the first of which, On the Track of the Sasquatch, in 1968. Over the years, this first book would go on to sell over 250,000 copies worldwide. Owning your own printing press certainly has its advantages, and this would assist Green in writing and publishing three more books in just 5 years. While pursuing the subject of Sasquatch, Green went on to raise his family, run his newspaper business, and he was involved in many things, including politics. He was actually elected village mayor of Hot Springs in 1963. He had many passions, including sailing, and he enjoyed time as a competitive sailboat racer. He was a shrewd businessman, and he invested well, and he also gave back to his community. But through it all, Sasquatch was always lurking in the shadows, and John Green was always there, seeking answers. He continued his research as well as his writing. He would go on to write Year of the Sasquatch and The Sasquatch File. He would eventually co-publish Sasquatch, The Apes Among Us, which included updated information, as well as much of the content from his previous books. When the revenue from his book sales outgrew that of his paper, he sold the Advance in 1978. In 2005, Green added four additional chapters of material and published The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot. The interviews, the field research, and the books certainly cemented John Green's legacy as one of the authorities on the subject. In 1999, director Peter Von Puttkamer would include Green in what he called the Four Horsemen of Sasquatchery. He profiled the four men in his film, Sasquatch Odyssey, The Hunt for Bigfoot. Included in the Four Horsemen with Green would be René Dehendon, Grover Krantz, and Peter Byrne. I will certainly be profiling the other three horsemen in future episodes of this show. John Willison Green passed away on May 28, 2016. But his legacy lives on in the hearts and minds of all of us who study these elusive creatures. So as we celebrate his devotion to the subject and the amazing resources he left behind, I'll leave you with an interview I dug up from 1999. The interview is conducted at John Green's home in Hot Springs by OTTV host Chris Green. The audio is pulled from a video on the Land, Sea, and Air Canada YouTube page. All audio credit goes to them. Please check out the link in the show notes that will take you to their YouTube channel. But for now, here's John Green sharing his thoughts on Sasquatch in his own words. Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
And it was quite obvious that there was actual substance to the story. So and the following year, this was in 1957 that this went on. In 58, there was a picture in the province of a man down in California holding a cast of a footprint. So I went down there to look into that and saw some footprints myself. And, you know, these footprints are real. Something has to make them. And
what do you think that something is? What do you think the Sasquatch is?
Well, it's an ape. It's a bipedal ape. I mean, you've got two facts that cannot be in any way challenged. Something makes huge, somewhat human-like footprints. And it should be possible to find out what that something is. And also, all over the world and throughout history, and in very much so at the present time, people have been describing seeing these very large, hair-covered, bipedal animals. And the fact that there are all these people who tell of this experience also cannot be challenged. These people exist. And that also must have some explanation. Well, you've got, unless you wish to go into supernatural areas, you've got only two possible explanations. Either there is an animal which accounts for all the stories and the footprints, or else this has been a human activity throughout the world and throughout history, manufacturing evidence that such an animal exists. And the test of Occam's razor is that you take the simpler explanation.
Right.
And the simpler explanation is that there must be such an animal.
What characteristics, if I was out in the woods and I encountered a Sasquatch, what would I expect to see based on your findings?
Well, presuming you're looking at an adult, it would be much bigger than a human. If it were in a normal position or if it were traveling, it would be upright, moving like a human. It would be totally covered with hair. It would be not only much taller than a human, but proportionately wider and proportionately thicker through to a much more extreme extent. Like the average human can wriggle under the bottom rungs on an old wooden kitchen chair.
Mm-hmm.
A Sasquatch of the same dimensions wouldn't be able to go under the seat of the chair, or would hardly be able to. So you have a thing that is immensely heavier than a human. And for a big one, a weight of a ton is not at all out of proportion according to the way they're built.
One of the lesser known things about some of the sightings is that it makes noises. There's been certain recordings of screams they've made. And the other thing is the smell. Is that common sightings, or is that a rare exception?
The range of noises that have been claimed for this thing is very wide. The most usual one is a high-pitched scream. But we don't have a single instance of anybody recording the sound and at the same time recording the creature that's making it. So really all of the sound evidence is speculative. I mean, you can't claim anything factual. This is the sound a Sasquatch is making. It might be, in some cases probably is, but there's nothing to establish that. As to the smell, certainly that there are many instances in which a strong smell is described, but in the majority of cases, when the witness is close enough so that you would expect a smell, there isn't one. So it would appear that it's a smell that can be emitted on purpose, which this material was available about the Sasquatch years ago. Since that time, it has been established that the same is true of gorillas.
They secrete a smell
that
they're in danger.
Yeah, if you read Diane Fossey's work, the large male silverback gorillas have what she calls a fear odor that they emit from special glands in the armpits. So I would speculate that it's something similar taking place here. That it isn't that the things stink to high heaven all the time, but that under certain conditions they can emit this strong smell.
Go.
If you're out in the woods, if one's out in the woods, what should they expect in an encounter? And what can they do to so that they can provide some sort of information for the authorities, for people like yourself who compile this evidence?
Well, if they see the creature and it stays there, or if they're lucky enough to observe it when it doesn't know they're there, they should certainly just take note of every specific detail that they can remember or write down. They have it, or of course photograph if they have a chance. And quite bluntly, if they're hunting and they've got a heavy rifle, they should shoot it, because it's just an animal.
Right.
There's no case for treating this animal differently from other animals, and shooting animals is still a common practice in this society. You make an exception for this one, it's only because of its resemblance to us, which I don't consider a valid reason. And scientifically, this is absolutely essential, because science will not accept that these things exist until they have a piece of one. They've got every other form of evidence in spades, and they won't even look at it. They've got to have a physical piece of it. And until you prove that it exists, well, try halting the real estate industry in Florida in the name of an imaginary animal. And yet there is probably the one case where these things are definitely endangered.
The habitat's diminishing.
The habitat is being paved over, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can't stop it. I mean, the thing isn't there.
What about native folklore? And what can you tell me about how Sasquatch fits in with that?
I've never gone into that to any great extent.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason, that in the Indian culture, as in nearly all cultures, there is no sharp dividing line between the real and the unreal. Everything is real. And this was also true of the European culture that we've inherited until just the last few hundred years. But now we make an absolute distinction. We put everything either on one side of that line or the other. And from my association with it, the key element in this whole thing has been which side of that line the Sasquatch falls on. So information you get from a culture where there is no line isn't very helpful.
What's the latest report or sighting in Harrison Hot Springs?
The one 20 miles up the lake last year.
Last year?
But they're not common around here.
No.
They're not actually common anywhere. It's just that they cover such a tremendous area that they add up to a great many.
And what did they see in this last sighting?
It wasn't a particularly good one, in that it wasn't a large thing and it was under very poor lighting conditions. It was a bear hunter, and he thought he was following a bear into the bush, and instead of that he saw this dark human-shaped and human-sized thing looking at him partly from behind a tree under heavy cover. So he thought it must be his hunting partner and tried to talk to him. And when he couldn't get an answer, then he backed out of there onto the road, which he'd just started into the bush. The road was only a few feet behind him, and found his partner standing on the road. And so that, you know, this, you've got a, all you have is a totally dark, human, apparently sized figure at a, he was quite close to it, I think it was 30 or 40 feet, but under poor lighting conditions. But it, you know, it's got to be either a person
or something,
or one of these. It's not anything else.
What's the most southerly report you've received in British Columbia?
Sorry?
What's the most southerly report in BC of a sighting?
Well, I mean, we get very, very close to the border.
There's really no border with the sightings. I mean, most southerly.
No.
I mean, it's right down to California.
The border isn't relevant to the Sasquatch.
No. Do you think it's a creature that migrates then?
No. No more than in the normal sense of being probably up high in the summertime and lower down in the winter, and you know, if going wherever there's is available food, but not in the sense of walking hundreds of miles to change the climate, no.
If you also,
that's one of the first things that people assume, and you know, people have been looking for evidence of migration, and it just isn't there.
What are the characteristics? You've also been to Russia to look at the investigation at the Russian Academy Chinese Academy have done.
Well, hold on now. There's no Russian Academy involved.
Well, there was a Soviet Academy of Sciences then.
No.
Well, they gave out awards.
Well, they had an expedition years ago, that's true, but mm-hmm. they didn't find anything. But the people who are researching it in Russia are much like ourselves. They have an association with the Darwin Museum in Moscow, and they have a seminar of their own, but there's no official backing in Russia.
So they're just as stubborn to the idea as Western scientists might be. Are they as open-minded as Western scientists are to the idea, do you think?
No, these aren't scientists.
They're not recognized scientists, then?
They're, as I say, they're amateurs like myself.
What about the so-called Patterson film from 1967? Where you actually see the creature walking. Mm-hmm. A lot of people claim every year that this is a hoax. What is your take on that? Because this is one of the most important pieces of evidence.
Yeah, the Patterson film is a movie of one of these things walking across a sandbar, yeah.
Well, some people have claimed that it's something in a costume, someone in a costume, or what do you say to people who say that it's a fake?
They don't know what they're talking about.
What is it about the film and research or whatever that's been done on it that makes you believe that it's a real creature?
Well, in the first place, there either are these creatures or there aren't.
Okay.
If there are, then this is a movie of one. But as to studies of the film specifically, it's been studied by experts in Russia and in England in biomechanics. It's been studied by in the United States now just recently by a man whose specialty is the evolution of bipedal walking, bipedal locomotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's again just recently been studied by one of the top experts in the enhancement of things like surveillance videos and so on. They've been digitalized to the point where I think there's some dozens of CD-ROMs. This man is now no longer doing it, and nobody else has the sufficiently sophisticated hardware to make any use of it. And none of these people have suggested that it's fake. And the expert in bipedal locomotion is trying to get a paper published in a proper scientific journal. And the enhancement man has issued a report at his home. The Russian work was done many years ago, back in the 70s. The head of an institute studying the mechanical functioning of physical bodies. I talked to him through an interpreter when I was in Moscow, and he reiterated what he said before, that he had no interest in this subject. He just looked at the thing as a favor, and it changed his whole concept of walking, because this thing walks better than a human. Jeff Meldrum at the University of Idaho, the bipedalism specialist, has done what we always had some misgivings about, because some of these footprints don't have the short toes like the ones we're looking at here. They have long, wide-spreading toes. And we, you know, we always were uneasy that some real expert was going to say, well, this is impossible. If one of these is genuine, the other is not, or so on. Instead of which, Jeff, working with both types, worked out a foot design that's quite different from a human foot, despite the generally similar shape. It requires you to walk in a different way, not pushing off with the toes, but using the ball of the foot, and not propelling yourself forward, pushing from the foot that's now behind you, but pulling yourself forward with the foot that's ahead of you.
So how could someone be able to hoax that?
Well, and then after he's worked this out from the cast, uh-huh. and he's traveled all over photographing and studying casts, probably studied more than anyone else ever has. And then he describes this way of walking, and I've probably simplified it to the point where not totally accurate, but he describes this way of walking. You look at the movie, and there the thing is doing it. When a human walks, as your weight passes over the weight-bearing foot, mm-hmm. your leg is locked straight. You take your weight on a locked knee. This thing does the exact opposite. The maximum bend of the knee takes place when the weight is directly over the foot. And for that reason, it has to pick up the other foot very high to bring it past the bent knee that's supporting the weight. And so automatically you get the bottom of the foot almost vertical as it's pacing, which is totally different from the way humans walk. Thing that you learn about footprints in this business, there's no good taking pictures of them at an angle. Taking at an angle, that doesn't work. It's got to be absolutely straight up and down.
Straight up and down, eh?
Before the mind gets the proper.
Our brain, at least.
Yeah, and the picture's not three dimensional.
Okay. Some of the strongest evidence for the Sasquatch are the footprints, and you've got two here. Can you tell me a little bit about each of them here?
The one on the right, the plain brown, is a cast that I was myself involved in making. That is in Northern California, up on a ridge where they were building a road, and this print was in very deep dust. And on that occasion, there were the prints of two creatures at least. Time I got there, you could only be sure there were two. The road construction foreman who'd found them, or the contractor actually, said there were three sizes, but we only saw two. But we saw more than 600 footprints, and they'd all been made in a single evening after dark, and during the time when this very dry dust was very hot weather, had been sprinkled and moistened on the surface with a little bit of rain. And all of those that were in the ruts where traffic moved had been destroyed by the time we saw them, so we're certainly more than 1,000 of them originally. The other one is a copy, actually. The original cast is just a flat gray, and that's a copy that's been painted to make it stand out more.
Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
Now that was in a muddy spot on the slough of the Skeena River, quite near Terrace. Footprints were found by some children, and a friend of mine who's now dead, who was more involved and more successful in this research than anybody else, was living in Hazleton at the time and was contacted by someone who knew of him. Went there and made casts of a left foot and a right foot. They were only the two good prints in this one damp spot.
Are they?
That was in the 1970s, I think 1976.
Is it difficult to? I mean, I imagine in some cases there are hoaxes of footprints. People go out to do this, but how difficult is it to hoax a Sasquatch print?
Oh, it certainly can be done.
It can be done.
Oh yeah.
I've heard of one discovery.
In various specific instances, it's very hard to see how it could have been done. For instance, what I just mentioned, where you have to make 1,000 prints in a matter that literally is in minutes, and yet they're so big that you'd have to sculpt them. There's no way you could just walk along and make them. Another case, there were prints an inch deep in a hard, damp sand in a sandbar, where I personally jumped off a log about 2 feet high, and to get an imprint that deep, I had to land on the point of one heel. So either you've got tremendous weight, or again, you've had to dig it out. But there are pressure cracks in the material around, and so on. There's no sign of anything being dug. In that instance, you couldn't get a machine in there. There were brush-covered steep banks down to this creek, and downstream there was a big log jam, and upstream there was a canyon with vertical walls and deep water. So, you could have come in by helicopter, but even that wasn't very practical, because there were people living in a construction camp just a few hundred yards away. When you start trying to explain all of this as of human manufacture, it gets so totally convoluted that you come back to Occam's razor. You're building castles in the air when there is a simple explanation. It's not an easy explanation to accept. In a way, you're dealing with two impossibilities. You start thinking that there is such an animal and it's never been found dead. We don't even have a bone. Well, you reject that automatically.
But we have found, there has been some hair samples reportedly found.
Yes.
Even the odd handprint and some feces, which have not been, they've been analyzed, but nobody's been able to determine what they are.
Yes.
They're not a black bear or something we know, so.
I'm not confident about feces analysis.
Okay.
Apparently they've been unable to get enough DNA to work with out of hair up to now. I mean, for years we've been expecting something definitive, even if it's just to say no, throw it all out, and we don't get any answer. There was just one instance with hair, and this wasn't DNA, it was immune reactions that did seem convincing, but the person who did it said, well, this has got to be either human, chimpanzee, or gorilla. Well, you could have eliminated all three, or confirmed or eliminated any of the three within minutes with a comparison microscope, but he had ground up all the sample. He was an immune reaction expert, not a hair expert, and it didn't occur to him that he needed to keep any. So. Now, these are brown hairs to begin with, and gorillas and chimpanzees are uniformly black. It included guard hairs, and human guard hairs grow endlessly, and they're therefore always cut off. They don't have points. All these guard hairs were pointed. And the hair had been collected one hair at a time by the same man who made that cast, going through the brush in a place where footprint evidence indicated one of these things had gone.
See.
And this is in Northern California. Well, the number of brown chimpanzees and gorillas that go through the brush in Northern California is quite minimal.
Not too many.
And
if the Sasquatch does exist, do you think it is a separate creature unto itself, or is it perhaps a missing link to our ancestry?
No, it's a totally separate creature. I mean, it either exists or it doesn't.
Right.
You have people speculating that 20%, 40%, 60% of the stories are hoax or mistakes or mass hypnosis or, hysteria. It doesn't work that way. Either there is an animal or there isn't. If there isn't an animal, then 100% of the stories are wrong. If there is an animal, then there's no reason to question that the vast majority of them are just the same category as people who say they saw a bear. They did see one. So you've got a great deal of information, even though there's very little information in most sightings. They just saw something run across the road is the common one.
Are most people?
But nevertheless, out of these thousands of reports, a great deal of information about what these things do, and of course about their physical characteristics.
What's their typical reaction with people then?
Hmm? Let me finish what we're dealing with. All of this indicates a creature whose adaptions are totally physical. It's solitary, it's enormous, it's tremendously strong, it has a full coat of hair, it swims very well and even underwater. It can run faster than almost any other animal. It can run down deer. It has never had any pressure to survive on its mental abilities. It lives very much the life of a bear. This is the exact opposite of the story of the evolution of humans. The fact that both species have ended up walking upright is the only reason why we relate them to humans more than we do other creatures.
Between whiskey. like what you think. I drink because I'm lonesome. I'm lonesome because I drink. But if I don't break down, bring it on myself, it'll hit out of from my pain. It was a long gone bitter truth. That's the difference between whiskey and you. Oh, that's the difference between whiskey and you.